Oh, hey, you guys, before we get into today's episode, I just want to let you know about a couple of things. The first is that we have a coaching opportunity for you. It is a self-paced coaching group to take you through the content of the Miracle Moment. Every week, I break down one practical teaching, I coach a guest, and there is an a challenge for you that week. And so if you just need the accountability and the community of a group of people to walk through the book with live Q&A with me as well at the end, then I just want to invite you to a 30 Days to Your Miracle coaching group. You can find out more about it at NicoleEunice.com/miracle moment. And just for you guys, we have a special 30% off coupon to that coaching group. The coupon code is LBR30. And if you sign up today, you can start the group with us. Don't wait. Jump in with us before you go any further. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Let's Be Real podcast. I'm your host, Nicole Eunice. And I believe we need all the help we can get when it comes to living a full and free life. Here you'll find honest truth, practical tips, and perspective changes that help you embrace the miracle that is your life. It's an in-process conversation that's going to be unfiltered, and it better be fun. Let's get real together. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Let's Be Real. Would you join me in welcoming our guest today, Maisie Robinson? Maisie, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I am so excited to be here.
And I am excited for you to be here. And I have a question just so people can start to get to know you a little bit. You are a therapist.
Yes.
You are actively present in the world of helping people really grow into healthy relationships, particularly women.
Yes.
So you and I are, you know, from the same mold on some level. We're different, but the same. So I do need to ask you, Maisie, what kind of 12-year-old were you?
Ooh. What kind of 12-year-old?
It's like sixth grade, you know, yeah. Maybe seventh, right around there.
Yeah, just so awkward. That's the first word as the visual comes back to me. No, let's see, sixth grade. So I was a good girl, you know, I like people pleaser, just wanting to do everything right, cross all the T's, dot all the I's. Those started my awkward years. Mm. Like we just really leapt into the awkward pool. I was a late bloomer. Mm. And so my friends started moving forward in life and
just in all ways.
Right. Yeah. And so that was, and I'm just like going really deep right from the get-go with you. But those were kind of the years where, like the next 3 years, I just felt like I really struggled to find my place. Mm-hmm. Because I went to school with a lot of the same people from like first through 12th grade. Uh-huh. And so those next 3 years, everybody started moving into different friend groups and speeds of life. And then I was just kind of moving between different groups, trying to find my place and feeling awkward and being the late bloomer and trying to be the good girl and make the good grades. And so it was just awkward years. I think middle school's just awful to inflict on adolescents.
Oh, like it
should be what we inflict on other people.
I asked that question as our lead up. We'll get from 12 to where you are today. But because I think that when we go back to those places of pain, we really do discover our purpose and like what we're passionate about. And I too had a very awkward, I say to this day, I went into student ministry because seventh grade was the worst year of my life. Right. And still probably to this day. And I think back to that space where you feel like you don't belong and you don't know who you are. And you've got all of these experiences of abandonment, rejection, or like trying to fit in and like compromising your integrity, not knowing who you are, and like how God uses that. And I think probably us therapists are a particularly bunch who might have experienced a lot of things in middle school.
Right.
So take us, like, fast forward us to today. Like, how does that relate to what you do today? And just give us a little picture of what a week looks like for you.
Yes. So how I became a therapist is a bit of a winding road. Mm-hmm. But now looking back, all things all things have been used and mm-hmm. all things are connected. So I'll give it a really short story. So I, in a former life, if you will, I was a classically trained singer. I was a classically Ooh. Trained lyric soprano. And so I majored in music and I majored in vocal performance specifically in college. And throughout college, I struggled off and on with performance anxiety. It would come and it would go. And then I got to grad school where I was going to get my master's in voice, as one does.
Okay.
And after
I have so many questions already, but keep going. Okay.
And at the end of fall semester, I came home and I was just burnt to a crisp. I was just completely burned out. I was depressed. I was anxious. I didn't want to eat. I was just really kind of a shell. And I told my parents, I said, I don't want to go back and I don't want to be in music anymore. And music, I had been studying music since I was 7 years old and it was really, it wasn't just a hobby. I mean, obviously I'd majored in it. It was, my life really revolved around music and performing and that was my social life. That was my identity. That was what I was known for. Mm. So to leave was really big. Mm. And so at first my parents said, well, we think you should stay. And I was like,
you are in grad school.
Right. They're like, we think you need to finish the degree. And I was like, oh, okay. And so then a few days later, my dad came home from work and I still remember I was sitting in my parents' living room and he walked in the door and he said, you know, I was thinking about it. You have no marketable skills. And I was like, I know.
Spoken like a dad does.
That's right. I said, the world does not care that I can sing Mozart. And he said, so there's no point in finishing this degree. But so he said, you can come home, but you need to figure out what you're going to do with your life.
Okay.
And I was like, done. I will do that. And of course, the yard people are now outside.
I know. I was like, this is a familiar sound that I've heard in the past, which it's a very unusual sound through the podcast. You know what I mean? Okay, Drew, you can just edit out that part. We'll just pick back up right where you're talking. It's fine. Like it's not a big deal.
Sorry about that. And so, so he said, you can come home, but you need to figure out what you're going to do with your life. And I was like, done. And so I thought, what is the complete opposite of wanting to be an opera singer? And I thought, a high school history teacher.
Know how that became your like other half. Like I wasn't going to go there. I was like a garbage man. I don't know. I didn't really think high school. Okay. I like it. I like it.
Yeah.
But you probably were you on a track? What does one do with a master's in voice? Do you teach? Is that like what most people do?
Yes. So the plan was that, I was going to get my master's and I then, was hoping to, teach, perform. So for a lot of classical performers, you know, if you're really good, you can just solely make a living performing.
Okay.
But for a lot of people, they will teach and perform. And so that was kind of what I thought I would do. I would teach at the collegiate level and I was probably going to have to get my PhD as well. But at the time I was just focused on my master's and I would have a teaching performing career. Mm. And so that was kind of the plan. And so I thought, well, high school history teacher, I will always be able to find a job and I'll have health insurance. And so it seemed like a lot of security.
It makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. And so within a 10-day period of time, I went back to Florida State. That's where I was getting my master's in voice. I withdrew from school. I moved out of my apartment. I came back to Atlanta, moved into an apartment, enrolled in a school here in Atlanta in their teaching certification program. And I ended a 4-year relationship, a dating relationship that had been very unhealthy and also very influential in my life as the story continues, you'll see. And so in 10 days, my entire life, except my name, changed. And so as I got into my classes to get certified in secondary social studies, I realized, oh my goodness, I think I'm really going to enjoy this. And so at the end of that year, my advisor emailed me, and this tells you how long ago this was. And she said, I was looking through the classifieds in the newspaper.
Mm-hmm. Like one does in whatever year that was. Yes.
Right. The year 2000.
People are like, what is a classified? Right. What's a newspaper?
Yes. Right. Exactly. And she said, I saw that this school is hiring somebody to start in January. You should apply. You can practice answering questions. And I was like, yes, I should apply. I've never had a real job before. I can practice answering questions. And so I applied. And then they asked me to, I came in for an interview. They asked me to come back and teach a class. I taught a class on 19th century social movements. I'd never taught a day in my life. Mm. Then they asked me to come back and meet with the head of school. And then a few days later, they offered me the job. And so I've often said that getting this job, the job was, it was at a Catholic high school here in Atlanta, Marist. And I've often said Marist is one of the great evidences of grace in my life, mm-hmm. because there was just no reason that a Southern Baptist raised vocal performance major without a day of experience should have gotten a job teaching history at one of the best Catholic high schools in the Southeast. And so Marist was huge for me. It was the, it's really the fork in the road. And so fast forward a few years, I was checking my email in between classes and I got an email from the school counselor and she said, so-and-so is about to come into your class today. If he seems distracted, just let it go. His family's doing an intervention with his father tonight and his father will either have to go to rehab or move out. And my immediate thought was, this kid does not need to hear about World War II today, which was what I was lecturing on. And my second thought was, I think I could do more. And it was really that singular moment that I thought about changing careers and becoming a therapist. I had never considered it. It had never even flashed through my mind. Mm. And so I kept teaching for another year and took that next year to really explore the counseling profession. And at the end of the next school year, I left. And that was a very, that was tough to leave that community because I loved teaching and I loved that community. And I went back to grad school. And so I have been practicing therapy now for 15 years. And I do specialize in working with adult women on self-worth, self-esteem challenges, relationship concerns, and life stage transitions. Luckily, I still get to do a good bit of teaching and speaking. So I didn't get to, I didn't have to give up that thing that I discovered I actually loved. And I see women across the lifespan and people, often ask me, the things that I specialize in, kind of where did those interests come from? And they definitely come from my story and my own journey, my own healing, my own recovery work. The things I teach on and speak about, those are the things that I'm wrestling in. That's why I'm interested.
That's in what I say to people when they're like, I'm like, I am bad at this stuff. Right. So that's why I write about it. That's why I teach about it. It doesn't come naturally. It doesn't come easily. And you should follow people like that. Basically, I'm like, don't follow people who are writing or teaching about things that come naturally to them because they're not going to be that helpful to you. Right. But I want to circle back on something that you said just as this conversation's developed, because you mentioned very clear, I would call them in the Greek, the word is kairos. It's like a moment of opportunity in time.
Yeah.
As opposed to like chronological time. And you mentioned these like very like vivid, poignant moments that you recognize in hindsight were moving you toward a calling. And I'm curious, in your work with women, have you seen that to be the case in many people, that they, when they really are able to listen to their life and awaken to their own story, they do have those experiences? Because my story is very similar in those moments of change. And I wonder, do you see that in the women that you counsel?
Yes, I do see that. And I think it is different for each person. I think some people do have these Damascus Road moments. I know I'm not using that term exactly as it should be, but some people do have these singular moments. Some people, it is more of an evolution, but I think for a lot of people, they do have those singular moments, but they run past them. You know, they let, because it would have been very, very easy that moment. Let's see, that was in 2004 when I, the school counselor emailed me and I had that epiphany. So that was 17 years ago. You know, it would have been very easy for me to go, oh, I could never be a counselor. I'm not a naturally patient person.
Well, but you also didn't do it right then. Like you, you let the thought come and then I researched it. You didn't, but you did at least, you were at least curious about the thought, as opposed to the other story that you told about yourself where you were at such a place at the end of your rope that you just couldn't actually go on. And I do think those two things happen in our stories, which is one is life comes to a screeching halt in a way that you cannot go on without, you know, actually engaging, right? Or you have a moment and maybe even you wouldn't even know that it was really for you until you explored it. And then looking back on it, you're like, oh, that was the origin story of this move.
Yes, I completely agree. You know, pain is a wonderful teacher. Mm-hmm. And if we let it be, and I think what I see often with clients is they experience pain, but they're like, well, maybe it'll get better. Let me try harder. Mm-hmm. You know, let me try one more time.
Yeah. And I can take more of this. Let's keep going. Yeah.
Right. Rather than, no, pain is trying to tell us something. Mm-hmm. Pain is trying to tell us to stop. And we need to recalibrate. We need to redirect ourselves. And so, yes, I think if we pay attention, pain can be a great messenger. And if we pay attention, we can hear those singular moments where we receive a direction. I do think a lot of people struggle to trust that they're hearing the singular moment. And I think a lot of people struggle to believe the pain, you know, to believe that, oh, it'll get better if I keep trying harder rather than, oh, wow, I need to stop and look at what's going on here. You know, because in a lot of ways, with the first fork in the road of leaving grad school and leaving music, I had ignored pain for about 3 years. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, I just need to try harder on whatever it was, the relationship I was in, music, whatever it was. I just need to dig deeper. And now looking back, I would not trade what I learned over those years for anything. It has so informed and shaped my life. And I missed a lot of red flags.
Mm-hmm.
And
Tell me how that informs you. Let's go therapist to therapist now. Yeah. Thankfully, I'm not actually practicing as a therapist. I do coach teams and individuals. But when I was practicing as a therapist, tell me about your experience of like being able to discern that is what is going on with a person. And just that, like, for me, I was just like, do you see what's happening? Like, what is your frame of mind? Because I think this can help us as parents, as, you know, in relationships, friendships, our marriage, when you feel like you can see that a person is stuck in pain, not willing to engage, like, what do you do when you love a person and that's what they're experiencing? What is your frame of mind about that?
It is really hard. It is so, so hard because it's horrible to see someone in pain. You know, it's horrible to see someone in pain due to their own choices.
Who isn't in reality about maybe those connections. Yeah.
Yeah. It's horrible to see someone in pain because of a relationship they're in and they're being subjected to pain due to the relationship. It's really, really hard. And so I think it's three things come to mind as I hear you answer this awesome or ask this awesome question. The one is we always have to lead with empathy, you know, and sometimes when we see someone in pain and man, I can see how A leads to B and B leads to C and why you're not sleeping at night. Like I see it.
These things all add up, guys. These things all add up. But I've been the person who's in 100% denial in my, that's helped me a lot to realize that in my own work, I have definitely rationalized and denied things over and over again to the point where people were like, hey, girl, hey, you know, like, so I get that. But yeah, go on. So you say lead with empathy.
So lead with empathy and really step back from the problem solving because we step into, and this is the case, like whether you're a therapist, a parent, or whatever, a friend, we step into problem solving because the other person's pain makes us feel uncomfortable. Mm. And so I want you to be better so I can feel better. Mm. And so here, have you thought about this? Have you tried this? Problem solve, you know, solution. And so what we need to do is to remember to lead with empathy. I know this is hard. I know you are so scared to make a change. I know it's scary to make a change because empathy communicates, I see you, I hear you. And really every human being just wants to be seen and heard. And it's amazing how when we feel seen and heard, it really can dislodge us. Something that I'll sometimes say to clients or I'll sometimes think about is we keep screaming, figuratively speaking, until we're heard. Mm. And it's like, until we're heard, we can't even begin to think about how to get ourselves out of the trap that we're in. But being heard and seen can begin to dislodge us in some way. And so the first thing, to always lead with empathy and to be very aware of when you step into problem solving, because that's more about you than it is about them. Mm. And the second thing that I would say, you know, particularly in my role as a therapist, I see my role as just holding up the mirror, you know, and that, you know, speaking the truth in love, of just holding up the mirror of, well, what is the evidence that this time will be different? Mm. And, you know, just let's look at the past. The best predictor of future behavior is past behavior. So what is the story you're telling yourself that this time your boss is going to be different?
Yeah.
And do you have hopeful hope, or do you have realistic hope? Mm-hmm. And so just that act of holding up the mirror. And then the third thing that comes to mind is that ultimately we have to surrender the person. Mm. And this is where my faith is so important. And I lean on it so much in my work, is I really see it as I have to surrender them back to themselves, and I have to surrender them back to God, because ultimately change is going to take place between, with God working through them and them doing the work.
Yeah.
I'm there as the companion. Mm. I'm there to point things out as we walk along the path. I'm there to hold up the mirror. I'm there to be sometimes the silent companion as they wrestle, but ultimately it's not up to me to fix or change them. And I think that applies whether you're in a therapist role or a parent role,
yeah,
or a friend role, that surrender piece of ultimately they have to decide if they're in enough pain to change. And that is a brutal place to be, to see someone continuing to find another bottom. But both those are the things that come to mind: empathy and holding up the mirror and surrender.
Well, I love that. And I think there's a lot more to say, and maybe just for our listeners to take, you said something so profound, which is like, when you're trying to solve problems, it's because you want to feel good. You know, where is the place, you know, how do we encourage even ourselves to like stretch 10% more into like being uncomfortable? Just like, yes, I'm uncomfortable with you being uncomfortable. I'm uncomfortable that I can't help in the way that I feel like I would want to help. You know, now you're saying empathy, holding up the mirror and being a companion is help. Like, mm-hmm, it's healthy help. Mm-hmm. But when we can't do the help that we feel like would change, I mean, to me, this is the most profound part of being a healthy person, mm-hmm, and that I need constant work on. It's not like something that you learn once. You actually have to really work on it, because it's kind of uncomfortable. It's really uncomfortable to see somebody that you love, that you think you know how things could be better, and then not give that advice or not push or control that for them, but really just stay near. It's a real work. So I appreciate that's so, so helpful to hear. And I know as folks are listening, one thing that happens a lot is like, oh my gosh, Maisie, this is so good. I need you in my life. And I'm like, I know, but she's only one person. She can't do therapy for everyone, or I don't think you can out of state anyway.
No.
So one of the things and reasons I wanted to have you on was because I don't like to leave people without practical help. And you actually have taken some of these pieces that I think we've been talking about and put them into a course that people, yes, can access. And I just would love to hear why you made the course and sort of what the heart of it, because in some ways now we're getting into the teaching side, right? Like there's the empathy companion side, mm-hmm, but on the other side, like both you and I, we do have like actual things to say about how to move forward in some healthy ways, right? So tell me a little bit more about that.
Yes. So the course is Uncomplicating Love.
Mm. And what a great title, by the way. I love that.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. And Uncomplicating Love is based on the idea that we are wired for love. We are wired to love and be loved. But love can be really complicated sometimes. Mm. Relationships can be really complicated sometimes. Even though we have this innate desire for love in our lives, it does not always come to us innately. Mm-hmm. It does not always come to us easily. But when we learn to live loved, when we learn to live from the truth that we are loved, And we are loved not because of anything that we do or accomplish or say, but we are loved because we were born by a good, loving God. Mm-hmm. When we live from that truth that we are loved and nothing in our lives can change that, it really changes our lives. It clarifies for us how to love ourselves, how to give ourselves self-compassion. It clarifies for us how to receive love. You know, as women, we are so good at loving and taking care of others, but we are not always good at receiving love or receiving help. And and we end up caught in this trap of, I'm just going to do and do for you. And deep down, I'm doing for you because I'm hoping that you're going to do and do for me. But then when you do and do for me, I don't know what to do with it. And so I stiff arm it or I reject it. When we live from the truth that we're loved, we know how to set boundaries in our lives. We know how to set boundaries with difficult or challenging people because we recognize that our worth and our well-being are worth being protected, which is what a boundary is. A boundary is not about changing the other person. It's about protecting our worth, our well-being. When we live from the truth that we're loved, we begin to heal our rejection wounds. And everyone has rejection wounds. Some of our rejection wounds are bigger than others. But in some ways, we all struggle with the question of, am I loved? Yeah. Do I matter?
Do I belong? You know, and taking it back to 12-year-old Maisie and Nicole. At the time, I went by Nikki. So, you know, who knows? I don't know if you went by Maisie, but we were both trying to figure out who we were, right?
That's right.
Of course, there's much bigger wounds than those. But I often say, your perception of those wounds is reality. It is not about objectively how traumatic an experience is. It's about what that experience taught you about yourself, about the world, about the Lord. And so go on.
Yes. No, I completely agree. It's about the seed that was planted. And that's why rejection, feeling like you don't belong, is such a powerful experience in our life because it does plant that seed of, do I belong? Do I matter? Am I loved? And out of that seed, we end up growing this story that is inaccurate and negative, and we believe this story. And this is one of the things that we talk about in the course is, what is the story you're telling yourself? And we end up living out of that story. You know, we end up living out of the story that I'm not loved. So I need to be perfect in order to be loved, or I need to achieve, or I need to make sure everybody else is happy and then they'll love me. And then that influences our choices and our decisions. And we just end up down a path where, like, oh my goodness, how did I get here? And I'm not even feeling loved or fulfilled. And so recognizing that story that we're telling ourselves and learning to change the story, that's kind of how we wrap up the course, is what are the steps that we can take in our lives to begin to change the story that we're telling ourselves and to give up this old inaccurate story and to live from our love story and identifying what are the shame reinforcing behaviors that we unknowingly engage in. And then what are the self-love reinforcing behaviors that we need to start practicing. And so I really see the course as is a deep dive into our own personal work, but it's also a deep dive into interpersonal work, because as we learn to live from the truth that we're loved, as we learn to love ourselves, that influences how we love others.
Yes.
And we can more healthily love others when we live from the truth that we are loved.
Well, I love that too, because it's inherently practical. And I often experience with people, when I teach or preach, they will intellectually assent to what we're saying, but then they're like, but I don't know how to do that. You know, like they awaken to the idea of, like, maybe I have been doing that. Yeah. So I love that you give this thinking patterns and behaviors as a part of the course to help actually start that journey, really speaking of forks in the road, to start on a different fork in the road and walk into that story of health. So love it. Thank you.
Oh, yes, yes.
So we can find you at Cultivate Atlanta. We'll put this all in the show notes too, you guys, but we can find you at Cultivate Atlanta. We can find out about the course there, correct?
Yes, yes. Awesome. And you'll just see in the menu, it says course, and you can read all about the course. There are 5 classes in the course. And so you can read about each of those. And then as a gift to your listeners, we do have a checkout code for you that will get you $5 off any purchase, and that code is REAL.
love a coupon. So the coupon's in the show notes. It's in the, on the webpage too, you guys, if you need it. And Maisie, it's been so good to have you. We always wrap with a little bit of a lighter question for all of our guests. Okay. So our question as we wrap today, because we love to go deep, but man, we can live on the surface too. And that's okay.
That's right.
So my question is there a product, an app, a thing that's just been changing your life, just making life good for you right now?
So I will tell you, as we are coming out of COVID, there has been a TV show that has been a bright light for me. I have watched it all the way through 2 times. I'm on my third.
I'm on the edge of my seat.
And it's Ted Lasso.
I was like, she's going to say Ted Lasso. I was just like, what is Maisie going to say just as a therapist? Cause it's like, for me, I'm like, oh, it's like such a feel good. It's just such a great, like, you know, character development and just like the power of love and great. And it's funny.
Oh, I mean, the first when I, cause I'd been hearing about, this was several months ago. I'd been hearing about, I was like, okay, I'll check it out. And after the first episode, I just was like, had this huge smile on my face. Like, this is, oh my goodness.
What can happen in the world?
Right. Right. If we just believe.
I'm with you. Okay, everyone, if you need, you just need it in your life. Right. Like, it's very free therapy. Watch Ted Lasso.
Yeah.
Evaluate your world through it and see what happens.
That's right. Be like Ted.
Well, thanks, Maisie, for coming on the show. We've loved having you, and you have certainly enriched our life today. So appreciate you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This has been so much fun. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for tuning in to the Let's Be Real podcast. If you have a question for the show, you can send it to me at Nicole@NicoleEunice.com. And hey, if you're enjoying this, we'd love for you to like, subscribe, share it with your friends, pass it on, shout it from the rooftops, whatever you feel like doing, because the reality is, let's get as many people getting real as possible. Talk to you soon.